Hello and welcome to Open the Podbay Doors. I am your host today, Ian Gardner. And yeah, it's that time of the week. I should actually say it's that time of the fortnight. It is the news special. Tons of news today. It's around about noon on Monday, the 26th of July. Just a ridiculous number of deal announcements and some great articles that have been coming out. So our press out there have been doing a great job. So thank you to the press for feeding us this constant stream of news that we get to discuss. An amazing panel that we pulled together today. So we have Melissa Widner. Melissa is CEO at Lighter Capital. I'm doing some work with her there. And it's an amazing business in the debt financing. Peter Dunn, he's just been in the podcast. He is head of venture capital at HSF, which is a major law firm. And he's just announced, he was part of the news, but he has joined Safety Culture as their general counsel, which is a pretty amazing step for someone like that. So good on you, Peter. And Barnaby Marshall, we have a Kiwi in our midst. So all the way from Auckland, he's with Ice House Ventures. Amazing guy. He's been at most of our Venture Down Under conferences. I think all of them actually, except the one we just held in Adelaide, because I don't think the bubble was open at that point. But yeah, really, really good panel. Really enjoyed the conversation. Let's go and hear from them now. All right, welcome everyone. This is the fortnightly news special podcast. I'm Ian Gardner, as ever. Yeah, and I'm joined with a fabulous panel today. It's kind of like the start of a joke. You got a Scotsman, a Kiwi, an American, and an Australian. So welcome, Melissa, all the way. You're coming to us from Seattle? No, where are you right now?
I'm close to Seattle in the San Juan Islands, Decatur Island.
San Juan Islands. Yeah, she gave us a little view out of her window, and it's absolutely beautiful up there. Melissa normally lives in Sydney, but you're CEO at Lighter Capital, where I'm helping you out with some work there. Fabulous business. And yeah, you managed to escape lockdown just kind of when Sydney was going into it. You escaped. How did you manage that?
Well, it did take 5 applications to get out and help from the wonderful Zolly Stegall, who is our local MP. Our local representative, and but we got out. Now we got out the day lockdown was announced. So I think we left at, I think, 10 in the morning, and lockdown started at 6 p.m.
Yeah, and if I recall, the challenge wasn't necessarily to do with you. It was you trying to take your son with you, and they were a bit more pernickety about that.
Well, it took 3 times to get me out, and then 5 times to get him out. So
anyway, we will touch on that in the first story, but I just want to introduce the rest of the panel. So next up, all the way from Auckland, we do cover New Zealand news, probably not as regular as we should, but Barnaby Marshall. Barnaby, you are a partner, one of the co-founders at Ice House Ventures. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about that and what you've been up to?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ian, for having me on today. I was kind of reading through a lot of the Australian news, familiarizing myself with what's happening across the ditch, but luckily we've smattered in a little bit of local news for me to have a bit more input into in today's discussion. But so Ice House Ventures is a early stage investment business. We've been, I was just saying to the team before, we've kind of worn every hat of what you could do as a contributor to a startup ecosystem over the last 20 years nearly. Being an angel network and incubator and accelerator and all the bits in between. But now we're really just a pure play, early stage investment management business. We've got a team of about 13 now, which has grown over the last 12 months quite considerably from about 6 or 7. We've got a pretty broad strategy. So we invest in quite a lot of companies at seed and pre-seed. This year we've already done 15 new deals. We've deployed about $20 million this year. That's also across 30 portfolio companies. So made 45 investments so far this year. But maybe that's a little bit too long-winded.
No, that's all right. Look, we'll get into that later, because I do want to hear a bit more about what's going on in New Zealand. Third in the panel, Peter Dunn. So Peter and I think it's 2 or 3 months ago, you were on the podcast, Peter. I think it had the highest views, and you know, I got direct. Mike Cannon Brooks messaged me afterwards saying, "Thanks for making Peter look great. He deserves it. He's a legend," something like that. So you are also in the news, Peter. So welcome, and tell us what's been going on.
Thanks for having me on. I actually really enjoyed that chat, and thank you. You were very kind. What's going on? A little bit of a publicity. My wife thinks I'm going through a Where's Wally moment. I seem to be in the AFR every couple of days at the moment. It was announced last week that, I think incorrectly, but it was announced last week that I had left Freehills. I haven't. I remain the head of venture capital there. We're pretty excited about the venture business, but I've, and unusually, I've moved into a part-time role and it accepted a position at Safety Culture as head of corporate development and GC or vice president of corporate development. And I'm just like super excited. The last time I started a job, Ian, was 1994. So I think the landscape's changed a little bit, but you know, really enjoying being on the other side. The team at Safety Culture are amazing. They're growing enormously. I've been lucky enough to do all of their corporate deals in the last couple of years and all of their capital raises. And I think at their last capital raise, they were valued at about $2.2 billion. So a lot of momentum, a lot of energy. I have been a corporate M&A lawyer most of my career. And so for me, it's stepping into the unknown and a heap of fun. And equally at HSF, the mandate is to continue to grow the team out. We've got three co-heads of venture capital and work with those guys to you know, keep growing. And probably the work I've done the last couple of years has largely been the strategic kind of stuff for founders or investment houses in making investments. So, that kind of slightly fits in neatly. Anyway, into the great unknown.
Yeah, there must be a huge amount of upside in Safety Culture. I mean, $2 billion feels like a lot of money, but in the scheme of things, it's not. I mean, how big can Safety Culture get, Peter?
I mean, I think that their ambitions are high. But, I mean, the founder, Luke Nee, you know, I've spoken very well of him. I know he's been on your podcast a couple of times. You know, he's got this kind of really nice message of like, let's just go and talk to the customers, find out what their pain points are and let's help them. And if we get that right, and we continue to expand the platform, then, you know, growth will take care of itself. I think I'd mentioned on our podcast, I kind of liked people who were trying to solve things as opposed to those who thought, oh, let's go make just a lot of money. And, you know, again, Luke's got an ambition together with the senior management team to move Safety Culture into a platform that really helps people, you know, manage their workforce, manage risk, manage compliance, and be entirely integrated. And I'm sure we'd all know it's amazing how many functions in society are still done by a piece of paper and a pen. And, you know, I think you've mentioned we might talk a little bit later about some of the comments from those in the tech industry around opening the country back up. And, you know, I mean, I think we can all see in front of us in lots of different ways there's a need to get on top of things and understand it. And so Safety Culture sees that it has a role to play there, and it has with COVID coming back responses. So, yeah, I think there's an enormous amount of upside. I'm really excited to be joining where it's at. It's not a startup, but it's got a lot of work to do. So, you know, roll the sleeves up and jump in.
Well, awesome. Congratulations. I thought that was a big announcement. It's not often you see lawyers jumping ship to become more corporate folks, so good on you. All right, let's jump into the news. Look, we had a run sheet all prepared and ready, and then there was a great article in the Fin Review this morning. I love the work those guys are doing. I think this was authored by Paul Smith, who's the editor there. He's been on the news podcast and the podcast a couple of times. And it's to do with the tech sector here really complaining about the government's response to COVID and the fact that there doesn't appear to be a coherent plan to get out of it. You know, Australia, and it wasn't just Paul Bissat. I mean, like Michelle Deaker was in there from One Ventures. We had Nikki Skvac from Blackbird, Al Coleman from Folklore. I mean, like, it was the good and the great of the venture community were wading in this. And the punchline is that the rest of the world seems to be almost back to normal. So they're able to travel, they're able to meet people. You know, so when you're raising a fund or trying to get your portfolio company or employ people, there's a big problem. And Australia is definitely being, in my view as well, left behind here. So Melissa, why don't we start with you? Because you are probably the most international of us here because you're right now in the US and you have been in Sydney. You kind of missed this weird second lockdown that we're all in now. But when you saw this article, what was your feeling?
Well, it's good to see Australia making this a priority. So, as you know, Ian, you weren't there, but there was a dinner, I think, right before I left Australia in late June that we did with PFG. There were some Innovation Bay people there. And I stood up and just asked everybody if they were vaccinated or if they had had a plan to get vaccinated. And, I mean, at that time, you had to be at least 40 to even get an appointment. But we had lots of friends who, you know, they could have gotten an appointment, but it just wasn't a priority. So the fact that there is this breakout is potentially, it's a terrible thing, but it's maybe a blessing in disguise, because now people will make getting vaccinated a priority. But I was lucky enough to leave to the U.S. I think the day lockdown was announced. I was supposed to arrive here weeks before, but it was very difficult to get out, even being an American citizen and being the CEO of a U.S. company. It took several applications to be able to get permission to leave. So Australia has done a great job, as we all know, of keeping everybody safe by keeping the country closed, but has not done a great job of getting people vaccinated. And I think that's really going to come home to roost if we don't accelerate things now. And it's interesting being here. I mean, there are free vaccinations everywhere. You get, you know, free tickets to a ball game if you get vaccinated on the way into the Mariners games. They're just, it's the access is so simple. And Australia's, you know, the country with the highest median income in the world. So why we weren't able to procure vaccines and get that rolled out in time for us to be back to normal now, you know, is really, really a tragedy. And yeah.
And
Peter, we're going to feel it. People are doing business in person right now. And Australians are very international. Their businesses are dependent on international business. And if it's really until the end of the year, there will be repercussions.
Yeah, no, that's what it feels like. And Peter, you're locked down with me, well, not in the same house, but in Sydney. And that's a bit of a drain, and not good for anyone's mental health long term. I mean, I'm struggling a bit more this time, to be honest. It's just no fun. When you read this article, I mean, did you agree with the premise that, you know, we understand how we got here, but there doesn't appear to be a plan or an announced step-by-step measures to get out of it, especially the timescale? What's your feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Ian. I think this one's harder. And I suspect all of us on this call are probably a little bit more optimistic by nature and happy, you know, a little bit happy-go-lucky. But I'm certainly finding this one harder. And I feel for people who may not have that, you know, a boppy disposition to start with. And we really need to kind of be kind to each other. I just like in terms of the government response, I'm sort of exhausted with like blame game or how we got here. And I really like the quote, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago and today. And so what I actually kind of think, okay, now time to get going. And I absolutely agree with Melissa's sentiments. And I think as a whole country, we got complacent. And I think the population got complacent as well and weren't holding politicians to account. You know, there was a sense we've beaten it without, probably the logic around, well, we'll just keep our borders closed really wasn't played out. I mean, you actually need a politician standing up and saying, if we don't get vaccinated, then we don't have an education system and we don't have a tourism system. And these are the implications. I blessing in disguise, actually think you're right, Melissa, but I think one of the things that's probably going to help change the psyche is when we started to get locked down, we were all watching Wimbledon. And there's a sense of, hang on, there are countries that are coming back out of this. And I actually think we need a really strong education campaign right now, because I think the discussion that's going on is quite at the extremes. And I personally think it's become apparent that the only way out is through a vaccination program. And one should discuss the implications of that and the potential risks, and not in a histrionic way. And then one should seek to implement. But I agree, Melissa, if we're still in lockdown in November, December, I think that's going to be a hard spot for the country, both from a psyche perspective and an economic perspective. And so I would endorse the comments made today and would rather hope that we will see both all sides of government stop being partisan, or the state and federal squabble is exhausting now and it's time to move on. Yeah. And let's be coordinated with a rollout to get the country back and going.
Yeah. Barnaby, you're in Auckland. I mean, New Zealand's had a, you know, relatively, you know, this is a terrible expression, but a good pandemic. I mean, you've kept people safe and you've kept you have kept the borders shut. But, you know, safety, that I don't think the vaccination is going that well, as far as I'm aware, over there, maybe slightly better than us. But, you know, you can touch on that, but I do want to ask you about the impact of the the closed borders, because you can't, I think it might be easier to leave New Zealand, but getting back in could be hard. I mean, is this having an impact on you and your portfolio companies?
Yeah, I'd say that the biggest impact that we're experiencing right now is just around access to talent. It's kind of like there's a bit of an echo chamber within the New Zealand tech ecosystem now that there's a real problem around getting the right types of people and the right types of skills into the country to continue to kind of grow our way out of this kind of economic, I wouldn't say downturn necessarily, because the reality is it hasn't actually been for the most parts of the New Zealand economy, but it has, it's turbulence, you know, it's disruption across many sectors. So I think that's probably the most like widely felt probably problem that we've got currently that is pandemic related. But just touching on the idea of the vaccine, I think there's not really as much chatter as you would expect within the New Zealand media and government around learning from our trans-Tasman peers around kind of taking a more proactive approach around the vaccine. The vaccine rollout is, as you said there, Ian, pretty sleepy. And we've experienced we've not had a lockdown in New Zealand since March this year, which is only a day. And I think the last 300 days, we've probably only been in lockdown for like 60 or something like that. So we've been relatively protected in that regard and successful. But that's led to a level of complacency that, I mean, you see people come back from the Olympics or other people coming to visit New Zealand over the next 6 months, and we're not immune from having a resurgence and going back into lockdowns, which I think we're just really, Sydney's experiencing right now, right? It's challenging.
Yeah, but Barnaby, I mean, is there a clear plan from the government to open the borders and get New Zealand back into the world?
Not at this stage. No, it's been really unclear from the Labor government as to how that rollout's going to happen. So, I think that the tensions are growing. It's not a boiling point yet, but it's definitely something that's simmering. It's on high simmer, let's call it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is that for both, certainly in Australia, the state premiers and the national government, initially just keeping the borders shut and keeping people safe was a vote winner. It feels like the tide is turning and it's now going the other way. And now there's just anger and a bit of resentment at the poor vaccine rollout. And I think more importantly for us in the startup ecosystem, the effect that it is going to be directly having on our sector, just with jobs and exports and all the things that we care about, we are going to get left behind if we don't fix it. Anyway, look, it's probably, I don't want to spend any more time on this one, but it is definitely the topic of the day. So thanks, Paul, for putting that in the press. All right, what else we got? So there was a piece in Crunchbase today, and there's a whole bunch of, like, I don't think I've ever seen as many deals announced in the last fortnight as this one, and we'll get onto that just around the Australian ecosystem. But the world is booming. This article was about the world's unicorns. There's now over 900 companies valued at over $1 billion. In aggregate, it's $3 trillion of value, and that's gone up by $1 trillion in the last year alone. So kind of staggering numbers. I mean, this is a global piece, so it covers the US, China, not so many unicorns in Australia, but a few. So where should we start on this one? And Melissa, any thoughts on this one when you saw it?
Well, when COVID hit in March of 2020, I thought, okay, we're in for another cycle in terms of a downturn. I started my venture career in early 2000, and then the tech wreck happened. And then I went through the GFC, and this is just the natural cycle. And I thought COVID would be the third one. But it only lasted a few months and things are booming more than ever. And I think the sentiment is that you can't lose in this asset class. You can't lose in tech. So, and there's that combined with there's no yield in debt anymore. So it's where you see a lot of institutions who typically would not invest in this asset class allocating resources here. So there's more resources allocated to this asset class, venture capital and private equity, than ever in the history of the world. And it's because we really haven't had a downturn since 2009 in this asset class. So people are feeling that it's bulletproof. You know, I get a little bit.
And what's your feeling like? Or is that right?
Pardon me?
Do you think that's appropriate? Or do you think
we're I thought it was kind of frothy in 2014 and it just keeps going up. So I might not be able to ask.
You know, the stock markets around the world are at an all-time high. I think Australia hit an all-time high. US was all-time high last week.
And we look closely, you know, at Lighter Capital. We look at SaaS multiples because we fund, we provide non-dilutive financing to primarily SaaS companies. And the average SaaS multiple for public companies on the US NASDAQ right now is 16 times ARR. If you went back to, you know, the worst it ever was under 2. But you take an average, since this was measured, is sort of 4.5, 5, or 6. So we're at a really high number. And the question is, you know, were they really undervalued before, or are we at crazy valuations
now? Yeah. And just to be clear, that's measured on a multiple of revenue, not on a multiple of earnings.
Yeah.
Is that appropriate? I mean, that just seems, you know, if you said that to a financier back in the 80s or 90s, they'd have thought you were crazy. That's a new metric. What about you, Barnaby? Like, any thoughts on how's New Zealand doing with the unicorns? I mean, you got your zero, but who else is up and coming? And what do you think about this world statistic?
There are a few more emerging unicorns or ponies, maybe on their way to becoming unicorns, little horns starting to emerge, maybe. But it's a wild number that there's $3 trillion worth of value in these kind of unicorn companies. And I suppose there's a confluence of different kind of macroeconomic conditions which have probably led to it, as Melissa just touched on, low interest rates and, you know, quantitative easing around the world. And then, you know, there's, I suppose, the pandemic's also caused a lot of these companies, potentially private ones or public companies, to accelerate their growth. So it's a hotter asset class, and potentially it's also brought forward a bunch of change in the world that was going to happen anyway, that will continue to take place as consumer purchase habits change. I mean, education, good ones. I mean, we're going to touch on that a little bit later on, but that's an interesting space. And I think we're going to continue to see a change in the way that education is provided for throughout the world. We've got one company in our portfolio, Crimson Education, which is not yet a unicorn, but it's well on its way. Its most recent valuation was kind of 680 or something like that, million New Zealand. And their new online school, which they've launched at the start of last year, has gone from zero to about 15 million of run rate, which is just, and that's actually participants from around the world, and it's a New Zealand based school. So, I mean, I think it does seem super frothy and kind of divorced from any metrics that we used to use in the past to try and ground valuations, but perhaps the music will keep going, and actually it's not irrational, because there's actually some big trends which are moving in the direction of this new economy and away from traditional incumbents. So time will tell.
And Peter, I have to confess, I mean, I don't love the expression unicorn. I mean, is this even a relevant number? I mean, 900 unicorns, $3 trillion. Like, what is your thinking?
Oh, it's you know, it reads well in a newspaper article, and that's not being critical of anyone in the media. Like I you know, it's called, sort of come into commonplace now. And I think the discussion around how a company is going, probably the way I think of it is, what's the fundamentals of that business, and is it one where markets will always have a level of frothiness or a level of kind of depression than since the dawn of time, but you know, what's the underlying business model and platform, and how is that going? I mean, if we look at one of the stories in the last week at the, you know, Canva, you know, suggestion that they're going to raise at a $30 billion US valuation, and but their business model is just amazing. They've built a really fantastic product, and it's just being rolled out and rolled out. And they're moving, you know, from an original concept into more of a platform kind of basis. And it's incredibly powerful. I'm a little bit like Melissa. I can certainly remember the tech downturn in 2000, and there was a wild exuberance. There seems to be an exuberance here. And of course, there'll be some businesses that kind of don't work, but I think there are fundamental changes happening that are driving that. And probably one other thing on some of the deals that have come up this past week. I guess if I look for kind of trends, you've got the announcement that ANZ are setting up a fintech, a venture arm, and you've got Woolworths announced they invested in a meat-based business. Now, there's two very large corporates who are getting into venture, and I think that's a recognition that they need to, that they're not going to be able to innovate as quickly enough inside. So, I mean, that's a good trend that's going to continue. And then you've got the Invoice2Go acquisition, a really great Australian startup that's now kind of been sold. And I think the acquisition opportunities that are going to come forward in the next sort of 18 months to 2 years will be predominantly tech driven. So I think those factors help underpin a level of activity that means if there is a correction, I don't think we go all the way back like we did in 2000 with the tech meltdown.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a positive slant in that. All right. Let's move on. Like Barnaby, I might start with you. Like, as I said at the top, we don't have too many Kiwis on the show like Bear does. You know, and maybe part of that is because the Kiwi ecosystem is maybe a little, what's the best way of putting it? Less mature. I mean, it's smaller. It doesn't have as much venture, but there's a new class emerging, including you guys. So, I mean, first of all, before we get into the news, like, can you just give us an overview of the Kiwi landscape and what's going on, and tell us about Icehouse and what you've been doing?
Yeah, sure. So I think, you know, we're probably 10 years behind Australia with respect to our maturity of the tech ecosystem. I think it's probably been going in New Zealand for about 20 years in earnest. But really in the last kind of 4 to 5 years, we've seen an acceleration of the number of funds and therefore the number of companies. I'm going to get this number wrong, but I'll try and say it anyway, just to give you a bit of a kind of sense of the order of magnitude of the New Zealand venture ecosystem. I would at a guess say that last kind of February, March, the beginning of last year, there was probably about in the order of like 200 million of dry powder in early stage venture funds that was ready to deploy. As at, you know, this month, with a number of new funds having recently launched, we're probably in the kind of 600-800 million now, and so there's a lot more money available, and that's probably from like, you know, pre-seed through to Series A, and maybe counting a little bit for the likes of Airtree, who are present here, not boots on the ground, but do have an allocation to spend time and money down here. So there's a real.
I'm sorry, Barnaby. Just to be clear, that was in the last year. It's gone from 200 to 700 or 800.
Yeah, it's been a huge acceleration. Just of number of new funds that have launched. I could list off a bunch, but they probably won't be. I suppose it's hard to have for them to be super relevant. But a number. I mean, NZGCP, which is a government-backed fund, is backed by Super and it exists to allocate money across the sector and fill this like Series A gap, which is perceived by lawmakers, that's allocated 300 million to funds. So it's a fund of funds. So that's accelerated quite a bit of the available capital. It's not all allocated yet, but it's starting to be. And then just a number of new players. We're seeing a little bit of the emergence of niche vertical players. There's a mid-tech fund, which is recently launch, which is specifically for medical devices. We're seeing a little bit of this kind of climate change slash more broadly speaking impact driven focus. And there's niche funds that are starting to focus just on those types of portfolio companies, which I think is a good sign of the maturity that's starting to emerge.
Yeah, I mean, one of the articles that we were going to talk about was on Rocket Lab, and we'll get to that. But you know, TradeMe, Xero. I mean, there's been some pretty awesome successes that have, you know, plowed liquidity and talent back into the ecosystem. And now you're seeing it with Rocket Lab. I mean, Rocket Lab's a orbital launch company out of the North Island. Peter Beck's the CEO. And the news was that he's turned 100 of his staff into millionaires, not overnight, but, you know, I think the latest valuation round, or was there a liquidity event in
it's
that?
A SPAC.
Yeah, do you want to touch on that?
It's just happened on NASDAQ. Yeah, so that's been a darling of the New Zealand tech ecosystem for a while. It's going to be a long time coming for them to get to a liquidity point. But I think it is quite a pivotal moment when you have, they've got about 600 employees. I think he said in the article something like 400 have equity in the company. And as at the SPAC listing, 100 have become millionaires or made more than $1 million, let's say, more accurately, from that listing, which I think is just a super exciting point for this ecosystem when you've got a bunch of rocket scientists having that kind of experience of going through the full scale-up journey and then being encouraged and kind of excited by the potential of the kind of startup economic engine. So we see a lot of a lot of our investments come from folks that have gone through a Vend or a Xero, things like Pushpay is another great example of a scale-up organization that's created a lot of talent and recycled that back into the ecosystem. And so the likes of Rocket Lab doing this is, I think, a pretty good leading indicator for the deal flow that we'll see in the next 12 months.
And Melissa and Peter, before we move on from New Zealand, what's your observation as to what we're seeing over there? Like maybe Melissa first.
I've always been impressed with New Zealand tech. I was just, Barnaby and I were chatting before we started the podcast. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but they must be in the top like 2, 3, or 4 in the world in terms of startups per capita. And I think one of the reasons they've done so well is they're always thinking global first. They never think of a solution that will only be for New Zealand companies. So we've seen so many successful companies come out of New Zealand, and I think we'll continue to see that. And it's interesting being over here and hearing a lot of VCs in the US talk about New Zealand and Australia as if it's, as if they're equal, because in terms of the companies they've seen come over there, you know, they're thinking a lot, of course, of Xero and Vend, and they see New Zealand as a real player in the technology market.
Yeah. And Peter, have you had any many Kiwi deals in your career?
I think in a former life when I did quite a lot of private equity, and I actually think the New Zealand venture landscape will follow the New Zealand private equity landscape, in that Australia was a really strong private equity market. And then probably 10 years ago, you had some of the larger Australian funds focusing on New Zealand and some amazing businesses that came out. And I think Melissa's completely right. I think New Zealand, I've always seen it as a nation that's very outward looking, almost from the get-go. We need to look at, what we sell to the whole of world. And I think it's going to be a pretty amazing period in New Zealand the next 4 or 5 years. And the Peter Beck story is just phenomenal for, I think, New Zealand, but also for that industry, because you're going to get the best and brightest coming out of university now saying, we want to get into tech. And, that's such a good story for the country. And to add another big winner alongside Xero and some of those other companies you mentioned it's going to be a pretty exciting time. Barnaby, I suspect you're going to be pretty busy.
I think so too. All right, look, let's talk a little bit about news in the venture capital community. Quite a few announcements. We'll maybe start with the new funds that have been announced, and there was two, and Peter, you touched on one of them, but I might get you to start again. But yeah, ANZ spinning out ANZI. I think it's Rob Spector, I think, is the main guy there, and a really good team under him. And Tennis Australia, which is really interesting. I mean, they supported Techstars, but you wouldn't really think of a sporting body as a venture capitalist. But, if you look at their list of advisory or their advisory committee, they've got Nick Crocker from Blackbird, Paul Napthali from Rampersand, Brad Feld, who's one of the Techstars advisors and a bit of a legend in the US Boulder VC area. Peter, like, this is just in the last 2 weeks. I mean, are we seeing the resurgence? Are we going to see announcements like this going forward? And what do you think?
I suspect if you're a large listed corporate, you're seeing this. And if you haven't got an approach to venture, your board is asking you why you haven't. And certainly, I think the fintech landscape is going to be amazing. And I think Australia could do really well there. And some of the things that have been worked on are very interesting. And, you know, it's easy to talk about blockchain, but I actually think the regulatory system remains incredibly complex. And actually, Australia's probably got one of the best regulatory systems in the world, and it's still very complex. And so, technology that helps simplify that will have a global reach. And I suspect that's kind of driving ANZ as well. Tennis Australia, I think, is an amazing announcement, actually. And I think it would be wrong for people to think of them as, oh, just a company that organizes a tennis event or tennis events. And their CEO, Craig Tilley, is maybe one of the best entrepreneurs in the country. But Tennis Australia is an incredibly strong business, and I suspect they have aspirations to grow that more broadly. And do they expand into the entertainment space? I don't know, but I always kind of think you look for kind of quality people, and they've got incredibly strong leadership. That's kind of a great announcement. There's a small fund in as well called Athlete Ventures, which is headed up by some sports players and ex-sports players. It's getting some momentum. Matt DeBoer, current vice captain of the GWS Giants Football Club, is one of the leaders down there. And I think we're going to increasingly see in this country, and Melissa, maybe you would have had thoughts on what's happened in America, but not just celebrities, but sporting teams and organizations looking more broadly at how to grow their business model, and venture will play a big part of that.
Yeah. And Melissa, you're probably one of the best people to talk about this because you used to run NAB Ventures. So you were kind of part of a big bank's venture capital arm. So were you surprised that ANZ's done this, and any thoughts on tennis?
No, I mean, ANZ has had a fund for a while, but spinning it out, I know Ron has wanted to do that for quite a while just to have more autonomy. And I have to say that I've been in venture for really a couple decades. But when I joined NAB at the beginning of 2016, I was a little, I was a little bit, I didn't appreciate how much help as a CVC you could bring to companies. So it is wonderful being a CVC, because if you are trying to deploy money into companies, and especially good companies, there's no shortage of money. Money is a commodity, so you have to bring something else to the table. And corporates, if they can offer you a partnership, or maybe it's just giving you credibility by having them on the cap table, there's so much more that they can offer. So I think it makes so much sense. And as Peter said, Craig Tiley is an amazing entrepreneur, really forward-thinking. He's been really involved in Heads Over Heels. So this doesn't surprise me at all. I think what surprises me is, CBA still doesn't have a fund. I almost think, why doesn't every corporate, large corporate have a venture fund? Because corporate venture done right is just getting paid to learn.
Yeah, I mean, CBA sort of wrestled with it a little bit and then came up with the X15 model, which
right.
was
yeah, yeah. And yeah, I have conversations.
It wasn't a fund, but it was.
But I think we'll see more of it. I think the thing I'm so pleasantly surprised to see, we're in the fourth wave of CVC right now, and I saw, I started venture in the second wave where a lot of corporates thought we need to get a fund. And then when the dot-com crash happened, they all got rid of their funds. The same thing happened later, and the GFC happened. They got rid of their funds, except for a very few. Intel was one of the ones that kept going. But this has actually been a long run. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, what typically happens when the venture market crashes, the CEOs of these big corporates say, why are we in this? This isn't our core competency. We shouldn't be in venture. And the venture funds, no matter how they're performing, it doesn't matter how they're performing. They end up, being a casualty. But it's been a long run, and I don't see corporates backing away from this. I mean, we did.
Yeah, I think it's a great trend.
Yeah, it's a great trend. We saw, I'm blank. It's not IEG. One of the energy companies started a fund in Australia, an Origin, and then they shut it down after a couple of years. But other than that, people have been consistently funding.
And Barnaby, can you give us some insights into New Zealand? Because Adventure Down Under, which is the conference we run every year, we've had Spark Ventures was attended there a couple of times, and BNZ I think also had a venture arm or some activity. But what's been happening there?
Well, I think there's probably still a few casualties, and there has been some casualties already of the kind of executive leadership team driven venture strategy, where it's kind of like it's still reports back into the kind of leadership and can be on the chopping block when a new CEO comes in, or there's like a slight change in strategy, or one investment or so doesn't work out. And I suppose I'd be interested to hear everybody else's view on this group here around the best structure for CVC. What I've observed and what I think appears to be the best model, it sounds like ANZ is going down this path to some extent too, is the reinventure model, where the corporate is more like an LP, and it's actually a separate team that's really running the investment committee, and maybe you have a mandate that has some tie back to the mothership, and you definitely benefit from what you talked about, Melissa, which is the ability to add value through the corporate's supply chain or value chain. But right now we're probably seeing still a lot of corporates playing in this like accelerator space, which I think is still very underdeveloped in terms of like the thinking's not that well progressed.
Yeah, but, it's tough to move the needle like when you're playing in that accelerator space. I mean, I think Telstra struggled with Muru D. You know, it was great and they did a great job, but you know, as Telstra as a corporate beast, it didn't really care.
Yeah, but Will, what's the thoughts from around the room of best practice for CVC?
Yeah, like Peter, I might throw that to you. Like, and also, like, I just had Matthew Kirchke from Telstra Ventures on the show, and they kind of went from being a balance sheet investor under Telstra to being, you know, this reinvention model where it's a separate LP. I mean, do you think that's the trend we're going to see, Peter?
I think so. I suspect you'll see different models, but I think the reinvention one's a really strong one. Unless the management team have some freedom and flexibility, free of the mothership, I think it's very dangerous. And Melissa's right that if you have a downturn, you have the risk that the corporate says. I mean, there's a great quote, I think Jack Welch said about the GE capital business when the tech crash came, someone closed this popsicle stand down. And to the extent to which the fund or the management team feel that they're at the whim of the emperor, that's really hard. And I have some conversations with some corporate venture parties and, you know, in terms of setting up a term sheet, for example. And I think the comment might have been made earlier, but the capital is not in short supply. The really great businesses will get capital. And so it becomes a question as an organization, if you're wanting to get access to some things that may really, really help you, then spending a bit of time setting that up, that strategy up for success, I think must involve having a fund that where you're, all, as Melissa said, and I'll throw it to her now, but you're almost like a limited partner and you have some guardrails. But what I've seen play really, really badly is the large corporates acquiring tech assets and really wanting to get the founder and then bringing them into a model that it just doesn't calibrate with, and those businesses kind of not taking off. So,
And Melissa, we'll give you the last word quickly on this one. Like what trends are we going to see in the CVC model? Yeah.
That we could go on and on and on about.
But,
so I have a lot to say here, and it can't be said in a short amount of time. But I think in terms of a partner, it's probably better to be separate, right? Because you get more autonomy. Although, I mean, at NAB, it was really nice. There was, you know, I have to say our investment committee thought, you know, venture, you tell us what to do here. We're just really interested in, is this strategic for the bank? And if you tell us this is strategic for the bank, we're not going to get involved in how the deal is structured because we understand you know that and we don't know that. So that worked well. It doesn't work well when, you know, if a deal can take months to get done because it's involved in the corporate, then that can really slow things down. You're not going to get the good deals, or you're going to have trouble getting the good deals because they have other sources of funding. But I have to say that being in the bank versus being separate, when you think about the value you're bringing to the portfolio company, it's really hard to get anything done in a big organization, period. And if you're sitting outside that organization, it's damn near impossible. And even if the organization is one of your LPs, It's really difficult. So Reinventure is great. We did a lot of co-investing with them. But, you know, we did see that sitting inside the bank and being an employee of the bank, you had an ability to get things done in a way for the portfolio companies that you wouldn't have if you were a separate entity. So if I were a portfolio company, I would prefer to be funded and if I were a portfolio company whose sole purpose in taking money from CVC was to get something done with that organization, I would prefer to be funded by an organization that sat where the people I were working with were actually employees of that organization.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because the whole thing of caring and that, it gets very complicated if you're sitting in the organization.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's not go too far down the rabbit hole. We've got a ton of deals that I really want to try and jump to. But just before we do that, there were a couple of other VC announcements last week. So Airtree has deployed over $100 million in the first half of the year, which is a huge number. Our innovation fund, so David Chain and co, has announced a new upsized fund. So there's plenty of cash out there. Tractor Ventures has got another $10 million. Are we seeing we kind of have talked about boom time in the public markets to an extent, and I guess the private ones too, but this is just another extension of that, isn't it?
Yeah, just lots and lots of money, lots of interest, big superannuation, can't get into tech enough. Blackbird, Airtree, Square Peg, strong track records now, have raised meaningful money. Others will follow along. I don't think the trend of money going to venture is going to slow down or reverse.
Yeah. And Barnaby, like Icehouse has just either announced or in the process of doing a new fund, aren't you?
Yes, we're raising the new fund is about $75 million, of which we're about $60 million raised now.
That's great. Well done. That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. So that's a bit of a high watermark for us with respect to kind of developing our business. That gives us the ability to invest from Series A to D. Not that we haven't had that ability before, but it's something that's really focused on those stages. Similar trends. I think NZ Super and all the KiwiSaver funds are talking a lot more about coming into the venture space. It's still something that Movac is the kind of incumbent in the space here in New Zealand, and they have had some good returns over the last decade, which have, I think, given some more confidence to those institutional investors to make a move into the space. But we've raised some money from Simplicity, which is about a $3 billion KiwiSaver manager, and we're talking to lots more. So I think it's a trend that we're going to continue to see, as Peter said, in New Zealand, continue to see more institutional and private wealth managers moving pretty aggressively into venture.
And Melissa, any thoughts on this or even what you're seeing from a lighter capital perspective?
Yeah, well, Ian, as you probably know, we have a big announcement coming out next week with a large debt and equity raise. So, and then we have some big things happening in the Australian market as well that will be announced soon. But it is a very good time, especially if you have a track record, for seeking capital.
Yeah, no doubt about that. All right, well, let's touch on that because there is just so many deals that were announced in the last fortnight, just kept coming. Every time I opened the paper, it was in there. The first one wasn't actually a deal, but it was a rumored deal. Canva is out raising, and they're tipping that the valuation is going to be as high as $30 billion, which is astonishing. I think it was only 2 years ago they were sitting around $5 billion. The pace of Canva is just unbelievable. Peter, I think you've worked with these guys. I mean, any insights in this Canva? Or not insights necessarily?
I've done a little bit of work with them and acted for some people who've invested in them. And I was fortunate enough to go to one of their strategy sessions when I did my sabbatical at Safety Culture. I felt really humble being invited in. And I always tell the story that I was in a room with about 12 people I was the only one wearing long trousers. So it was such a contrast for me. A couple of people had sleeve tattoos and there was a dog walking around the room barking. And this is kind of different to what I might have seen in my Free Hills landscape. But the intelligence and the passion of the founders and the team they've got was just so incredibly strong. Melanie Perkins appropriately is on a pedestal. Well, like is seen as a giant. And I just think her understanding of product is amazing. And, Cliff has a really lovely manner, and I think his mind's whirring all the time. He's just a deal doer. So they kind of complement each other incredibly well. The product is working, and I think there's a lot more growth to come as well. And look, much like I was talking before about the Peter Beck deal in New Zealand, I think the Canva deal is going to be really, really significant. I think it's sort of they've done a couple of transactions where some people have been able to realize their investment, and they will be attracting a lot of talent, and they will continue, I think, to grow. It's a really strong story. I think one of the interesting conversations we probably will have, Ian, over the next 12 to 18 months is the tech companies feel that they need to IPO. You're seeing a rise in secondary kind of transactions now where people are able to get liquidity for some early investors and for some staff as well. And the Peter Beck deal out of New Zealand, obviously it's gone to the public market, but I think the secondary transaction is a significant part of the landscape here where people take a bit of money off the table and you keep going. And, it's very exciting. I'm pretty bullish about Canva, as are a lot of other people, obviously. But, at the end of the day, they're decent founders who work incredibly hard.
Yeah, no, they're definitely good people. I mean, what always blows me whenever I come across them or interview them is the scale of their ambition. The last, we did an Innovation Bay event with Cliff and Lisa, who was their head of product, I think. And they're talking about from $1 billion to $1 trillion. And is $1 trillion even, an appropriate market cap? I mean, like Amazon's $2 trillion and Microsoft's up there. So it's just astonishing. This is a story that keeps on giving. It's great for the venture community. It's great for the startup community. It's great for, if you're a landlord in Surrey Hills, it's great for you because anything that's vacant, I think they're buying up or moving into. Any thoughts, Melissa Barnaby, about Canva before we move on?
Well, I think it's really just been game changing for the Australian venture industry on many fronts. So one is on the venture capital front. So Blackbird was early in Canva, as you know, and Blackbird got superannuation money. And now superannuation funds think you can actually make money in this asset class in Australia, which if you spoke with superannuation funds at the beginning of last decade, so 2010, 11, 12, even probably through 14, they would tell you, we don't invest in venture in Australia because you cannot make money in venture capital in Australia. And we have all the stats to prove it. So Canva changed that. And that has spurred a lot of other superannuation funds to invest. Another thing that it's done is, I think we might get to this a little bit later in the podcast, but in terms of women starting companies. So now, you can't be what you can't see, and VCs are always looking for pattern recognition. Well, our most successful unicorn right now was started by a young woman. So people think that's how you make money now. You invest in women. And we see a lot of other women starting companies. And I have no doubt that that is partly due to, all the work that Heads Over Heels and Springboard and other organizations have done, but also just seeing such a success in Melanie. And there's something we haven't seen yet, but I think we will. And that's the Microsoft effect. So I'm from Seattle originally. And Microsoft, because they gave options to everybody from the beginning, which I think Canva did as well. It created a lot of millionaires who went out there and started venture funds or started other companies. And it really is responsible for why Seattle is, the second largest tech hub in the world today. We missed that opportunity with Atlassian because we had a tax structure where you couldn't give out stock options early on. So Canva, I think we'll see a lot of, ex-Canva employees when they do go public or when there's a big liquidity event, really changing more of the landscape in Australia.
Actually, it's probably a good chance just to touch on that article you alluded to. It was in the SMH, Sydney Morning Herald, Kara Waters, who's been on the show. Great piece, just talking about the percentage of startups that were co-founded by women in Australia, and really were doing better than the global average. It's still not a great number, but 27%.
By a huge factor, better than the global average.
Yeah, it is.
Average.
So let me just impressive. Give the numbers. So 27% yeah. of VC funding in Australia in the first half of this year went to female-led or female co-founded businesses. And the number globally is just under 11%. So we're way over double that, which I think, you know, to your point, Melissa, is a really good validation of some of the work that's been going on by people like you. Barnaby, what's happening in New Zealand in terms of female founders and the focus in that? I should expand beyond just female founders and make it more diverse founders.
I think it's obviously a really hot topic of conversation right now. And I think it's rightly so. And to Milton's point, you can't be what you can't see. I think that's a great drive for and a good reason for I think investors to get behind more diverse founders is to create more diverse founders. Right? It's just a virtuous cycle that can't be virtuous without. Those first few kind of pioneers. I don't know what the stats are right now. We've got more and more female-led companies being part of our portfolio, and some of our best portfolio companies are led by females. Sharesies is kind of a key example. Brooke and Sonia and Leighton, they're all three CEOs of that business, but it's just recently launched in Australia and is making some great headway. With enabling everyday Australians and New Zealanders to invest in the stock market, kind of like a Robin Hood story. Generally, I think, and just touching very briefly on the Canva kind of halo effect, I think down here in New Zealand, again, it's the same story that Melissa and Peter talked about, but it's hugely invigorating, I think, to see a company like that just to create so much economic kind of outcome for employees, for shareholders, for the founders. It's something that I think creates flow on effect and is a case study and model for lots of young people considering what to do with their careers.
Yeah.
Just one last point on that. It's funny. I'd almost love to work with all of you on that. I actually feel quite inspired by this. You can't be what you can't see. And then if you think of like what Melanie's done, what other founders have done, there's a really amazing business out of Sydney with an incredible female founder, Rejig, which I don't know whether they've been on your show, Ian, but it'd be worth thinking about them. It's independently verified, AI in the recruitment tool that removes all bias and it's a genuinely spectacular business and getting real momentum. They've done a couple of capital raises now. But I guess world's first and only independently audited ethical talent AI, like super cool. But I guess where I was sort of going is like almost to get all of us to consider. I think the governments in each of our countries really need to find a way to showcase some of these amazing female founders. To be saying that into high school so that young women and young girls, and I've got two daughters, but they see this as a pathway. Let's not make it hard. Let's make it inspiring. I think it would be a great thing for the government, our respective governments to continue to harness is that narrative of strong female founders being incredible because we've got half the population is female. Like, for goodness sake, let's engage them and show them magic and beauty and real role models. So.
All right, we don't have much time to rattle through the rest of what's been going on, but there's a couple of deals here that created a couple of new unicorns. So Go One out of Queensland, Brisbane, Andrew Barnes, they raised $273 million led by SoftBank. So that was a massive raise and a great outcome. A few local investors are in that one. I think Black Sheep was in there and a few others. Who else we got? Any thoughts on that one before I move on? Peter, do you know those guys?
No, not. I mean, it's a great success, but I haven't really come across them.
Hang on, a unicorn that you weren't the lawyer in the deal, Peter. That's a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't get out much, Ian. No,
And Rokt, ROKT. I mean, they've been based in the US for a while, but it is an Australian company. And they've just raised a round that's valuing them $1 billion. So they're in marketing. Don't know a huge amount about that business, but incredible news with the two of them. What else we got? So Sweat, which is Kaylin. I got that right. I think I may have mispronounced her name, but it's a fitness app, or not even an app, but it's a fitness program or service based out of Adelaide. It's global. I think Katniss. No, that's from the Hunger Games. I'm getting the name wrong. Someone help me out here. Peter, you must know everyone.
No, no, it's going to be two from two. I'm just, the mystique is falling away.
That's all right. I'll pull it up. But yeah, anyway, before we get to that, $400 million they just got sold for, which is Kayla. Sorry, that's the right name. $400 million for Kayla and her co-founder, which is an astonishing outcome for them. So anyone get any insights there? Again, Melissa, another fantastic female-led business that's getting an amazing exit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the company, but I did see the announcement and it's fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's tough sometimes to get, if you don't know the insight on these, this is part of the reason I left these discussions to the end, because it's more just listing them off. And if anyone's got any insights or commentary, then just, wave your arms here. Peter, you alluded to this before with Invoice2Go, and I think you did work with them, but Bill.com snapped them up and has made an acquisition there.
Yeah, we've been lucky enough to work for Invoice2Go for a number of years, and they, started in Australia. Really, really nice story. Pain point of tradies being able to issue invoices easily and have grown to a global business. And I think it's a really strong acquisition. And I think the thematic we're certainly seeing is that at a certain point in time, technology companies themselves become acquirers as well. And what's, what products can they buy to drop onto their platform? And so that's just a really great result for the local industry. I mean, one of the things we're going to see more in the next 18 months, Ian, are some realizations. We mentioned Blackbird, they did incredibly well with Canva, but it's like some of their portfolio now will go to the exchange. I think there'll be some M&A activity. So Invoice2Go is a really good deal, great founder team there. Interestingly, Employment Hero, you've listed in the sheet you sent around all of us, $140 million Series E. I mean, that's a great Series E. It's, I think, only in this country, CultureAmp have done Series E. There are not many people who've gone kind of that far. But Insight becoming more of a dominant player in the local landscape, or US fund, but I think they've invested in Safety Culture, CultureAmp, and one other Australian business.
Octopus Deploy, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, correct. So, great validation for the kind of the local community. You've mentioned-
Yeah, that must be $1 billion they've deployed here. So, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. I think Melissa, I'd be interested in your views, given that you've had, both the US and you're in the US at the moment, but an Australian kind of connections. I think once someone comes here and they do a transaction that, is it successful, then they're kind of in the local ecosystem, for want of a better word, they're in the conversation, and it becomes almost easier for them to look at assets and execute. But I think Insight have been very prevalent here. Sell were kind of probably 12 years ago, 10 years ago, but Insight really one of the stronger firms at the moment.
Yeah. And look, that was the last one I was going to mention, Employment Hero with Insight. I mean, $800 million valuation, so close to that unicorn. There's another nice piece in the AFR, I think it was this morning, it said, forget unicorns, One Ventures has a startup dragon. Now, I didn't actually know does any of you know what a startup dragon is? Because kind of had to be explained. But apparently, if you're a venture fund and you have a dragon, it basically means you're returning your fund from that one company. So I don't know whether the AFR just made that up, but there you go. Bit of education in that. But that's great for Michelle Deaker, One Ventures, and her fund, because that is an amazing return for them. They were in the seed round or first round with Employment Hero, along with some others. I think Airtree was in early there too. So again, another great result for the Aussies. Listen, we're over an hour. Any final thoughts before we go? Melissa, final thoughts, and where can people find you these days?
Yeah, well, Lighter Capital, we're providing non-dilutive funding to companies with recurring revenue and going strong in Australia. So just lightercapital.com.
Awesome. And Barnaby, what about you? Any final thoughts here, and where can people find you?
No, thanks so much for having me on today. It's been a great discussion, and really excited about the state of New Zealand and Australian venture capital. So, and the startup companies that we're funding. So, you can find us at isosventures.co.nz, and I'm on the Teams page, Barnaby@isosventures.co.nz. I don't use Twitter that much. I'm not a Twitter VC, I'm not a VC meme. I'm just a pretty traditional email kind of guy.
Yeah, awesome. And Peter, last word with you, like how final insights and where can people find you?
Oh, thanks for having me on board. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Melissa and Barnaby, great to meet you as well. One of two emails, peter.dunn@hsf.com, head up the venture group with Elizabeth Henderson and Claire Thompson and Clayton James, and peter.dunn@safetyculture.io in the corporate development role, and pretty excited about each. So, look forward to keeping in conversation.
All right, look, fantastic. Look, we have gone longer than normal, but there was a lot to cover, and I think we did it justice. So I really enjoyed that conversation. Thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next one. See you soon.
Thanks Ian and Peter and Barnaby.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Bye.